Hey, what's going on, guys? Thank you so much for joining me today on Vicious Whispers. Today we have episode 38. The short story will be Group Session. Yeah, why not? That's from Twisted Reunion. Before we get to that story, I want to catch you guys up. It's been about 2.5 weeks since I last filmed anything. The game plan had been to film the following week. I want to do this every week, but my life has been hectic. It's been stressful. It has been, and I'm not complaining because I know yours is probably way worse. But now I've been doing a lot of driving kids around, been doing a lot of neurofeedback at Vital Head and Spine in Pasadena. It's also where I'm doing my NUCA treatments, which is the, I believe it's National Upper Cervical Chiropractic Association. Originally, I was going to talk about that today because the results have been amazing. I'm super happy with everything. I was really off when they first looked at me, and now I'm feeling so much better, and it's corrected so many problems other than my neck. But that would mean I would have to listen to the interview I did. I'd have to do some research, and honestly, I just don't have time for that yet. So I'll dig into that when I get to that chapter in the brain book. Right now, I'm still on chapter 6 in the brain book, and in fact, I'm taking a little break because it's been a little overwhelming. Definitely caused a little bit more stress. It's not easy looking at traumatic brain injuries, especially my own, and thinking about where I might be headed, where friends are headed, where friends already are. So I'm giving myself a little break. With that time, I have gone over some more of the Untold Mayhem. We just got the cover for that. If you're lucky, I might share it. But my buddy Jeff Campbell, who did Ain't No Messiah, he's also doing, he also did that one. So that's pretty exciting. Those advanced copies should be out relatively soon. Let's say another month. I know I'm always calling shit early, but that's what it is. And then another thing I did, even though the sequel to Brightside is not yet finished, I'm on a little break from that while the editor's going over it. So I decided to pull out the second book in the Tales of the Blessed and Broken series. So the sequel to Messiah. I've been going over that. Very happy with how much I already have. I believe there's over 40,000 words. In fact, I was writing that book before I even came up with the idea for Messiah and realized that Messiah needed to come first. So going back to that is going to be pretty awesome. It's a lot of fun. And not only do I get to, rework everything that I already did and add more, but I get to add all the Messiah shit that, I hadn't even considered before. So now I have to see how that's shaped this world, how these characters are thinking about it and all that kind of stuff. So that's what I've been playing around with at night, because my days have been so busy. So that is where I am on the fiction side. Also, today was awesome because I got an email from one of my, I can't tell you who yet, but it's a singer from a band that I really like. And I wrote to him a couple days ago asking him if he might be interested in doing a Try Not to Die. And his response was amazing. He said he would be delighted. So we are now trying to figure out that, what we're going to write about. We have so many similar passions and interests. And he's awesome. So I know it's going to be an incredible book. So that's pretty badass. Very happy about that. On back to the brain stuff, I did finish, I don't know if I talked about last week or not, or well, last episode or not, but here it is. Head Games by Christopher Nowinski. If you have not read that and you're interested at all in traumatic brain injuries, maybe you have a kid that you're thinking about putting them into contact sports or something like that, I would read this. Reading it got me very upset, very scared, very motivated to do things. And it's actually the first book that ever made me want to donate my brain. And so I did. I'm in the process of it. I wrote to Boston University, where he's the co-founder of their, whatever it is, I forget the fucking name, the Concussion Legacy Foundation. But they also have this brain bank. And so I wrote to them saying I want to donate my brain. And they said, fuck no, we don't want that thing. It's all screwed up. No, that's not what they said. So yeah, when I die, that's where my brain will be going to. So that way we can see whether or not I have or had CTE and any of that fun stuff. Another thing I plan on doing with the neurofeedback I'm doing at Vital Head and Spine, we did a brain map, pretty interesting. I'm going to be doing another one relatively soon, and then there will be one at the end. And after those are done, I also want to do one at the Amen Clinic, which will study things a little bit differently. That looks at blood flow. One of the reasons I want to do that is because of a study that Dr. Amen wrote regarding cannabis users. I just heard him recently talking about that and how much blood flow restriction there is to different parts of the brain for with cannabis users, and how many parts of the brain, or maybe all parts of the brain, were smaller, including the hippocampus, which is directly tied to Alzheimer's and memory and everything else. So I was like, you know what? Not only am I seriously reconsidering my approach to cannabis, which has dropped tremendously since my usage has dropped so much since I started neurofeedback, which they told me it would. I would just kind of lose the urge, and there are many nights where I just forget to use it. And if I do use it, it's generally late at night now, or if a friend comes over, I just want to hang out, want to relax. But it's kind of nice feeling like I don't need it. And if it is something that is seriously increasing my chances of Alzheimer's and dementia, then perhaps I will completely stop it. And I think that's what I need to see. I need to see, you know, yeah, it is going to, you know, it is going to be bad. I've been so big on promoting it and saying, yeah, it's helped me so much, which it has, I believe. You know, it's helped me deal shit with how many years of head trauma have I had? Fucking a lot. That was one of the things we saw with the neurofeedback, was that because of all these concussions, like for the longest time, I haven't been having a good deep sleep. That's one of the first things that they've been working on correcting, and now I go to bed early, I wake up feeling rested, just in such a better place. So yeah, we'll get into all that stuff later on, but just yeah, I want to touch on it. Thanks to the Nuka, I am considering getting back into jiu-jitsu. Took my son yesterday to go train. He was excited to get back into it. One of the things we've been doing here on Sundays, and I want to do it more often, is I'm holding mitts for my wife, my daughter, and my son. And so I'm letting them punch, kick, and everyone's enjoying it. The other day, my wife led the whole workout, except for that part. But she did the conditioning. We were doing 1 minute drills, and it was just a lot of fun. I didn't want to do it prior. My back was kind of hurting, everything was kind of hurting. I was just in a grumpy mood. But like shit, 10 minutes into, I realized like, okay, I needed to do this. This is important. I already feel so much better. And that's another thing I realized too, is I'm doing all this research on traumatic brain injuries. I'm talking to people that have traumatic brain injuries. I'm talking to doctors saying what to do, and I'm not following the fucking advice. So like one of the big things is mindfulness and meditation, something I just have not been doing much of. The other big thing I could be doing every day, and I'm really not, is exercise. Exercise is huge. My doctor has pointed that out to me, that that's probably one of the reasons why I've been emotionally unstable, and had all these different, you know, other things to go with it. But for overall brain health and body health, regular exercise is huge. So I need to do that, whether it's yoga or jiu-jitsu or something else. I need to start doing it. I had been prepared to go back into those activities last week, and then I tore the skin off my toe. So that kind of sucked. I really don't want to do any down dog right now or try pushing off on a skinned toe. And a skinned toe doesn't seem like a big deal, but it's also the toe where all the skin had come off. I lost all the meat on that toe in a motorcycle accident after graduating from Brown. I had just driven all the way across the country. I think I'd been home for a week, and someone hit me like a mile from my parents' house. And I don't know how many stitches I had, but I do know it was fucking painful as hell. And they took pretty much all, like all the meat off my big toe was ripped, and it was cut down the middle of my foot because I wasn't wearing boots. And yeah, that sucked. So that toe's always been kind of painful. If I kick anything, if I stub my toe, it hurts like hell because it's right on the bone. And that's the one I decided to skin the other day. But enough about that little bullshit. Again, small problems, no big deal. It will heal soon enough, and I will be back to training. Bump, bump, bump. So what else? What else? What else? I don't know, man. That's pretty much it. That's my life. That's what's going on right now. Right now, I'm excited. I'm excited about the Try Not to Dies. Excited about The Bridge. And that's a working title for that, the second book in the Messiah series. I'm about to work with a marketing company to actually start promoting my shit, because that's something I don't do. I don't promote this podcast. I don't promote my work. Even though I swore I was going to do social media, I fucking hate social media. And so I have not been posting. I need to change all that because I want to be successful. So if I'm going to be successful, I need to do the things that are most likely going to help me get there. And that word successful, definitely, what interpretation is successful, right? I could already say I'm successful because I published books. I could say I'm successful because, you know, unlocking the cage and what it gave me and what it gave my family and all this other stuff. So I've definitely, I credit some success, but I have not hit the financial success. I want to become a bigger name. I want more people to read my stuff. I think I have good stuff. And maybe it can help some people. So that is my goal. It's not that I want to make a lot of money. In fact, whatever money I make, like, I want to fucking help other friends. That's something that we do with our money when we do have extra money. We try to help friends open up businesses or do whatever else. It's like, I want to do shit for my family, my extended family. I want to help other people. And so help me do that by sharing this and reading all my stuff and telling all your friends about it. Or don't, whatever. Fuck me. No, I'm just messing around. I'm in a good mood, so I hope you guys are having an awesome day too. One of the reasons why I am in a good mood, and besides the neurofeedback, besides all this other stuff, is really just fixing my perspective. It used to be where if I was going to get in the car and drive my daughter to school, which is like an hour and a half round trip, I'd be pretty fucking pissed off. I'd be in a shitty mood. Especially if I knew I had to pick her up later that day, and just getting my mind around, okay, I got to be in the car for 3 hours with all these asshole drivers and blah, blah, blah. But once I changed that and I accepted, I was like, okay, this month, you know, for the next 5 months or however long, I'm going to be spending a lot of time in the car. I'm going to be driving my daughter or my niece to school. I'm going to be going to neurofeedback. I'm going to be sitting in a room doing nothing, watching a screen. Like, it feels like nothing. I'm going to be spending a lot of time doing this stuff, not writing so much or whatever else, but it's going to be good. It's just what it is, and I'll make the most of it. And since I've had that approach, things have definitely been a lot better. Haven't been getting as angry, haven't been getting frustrated. I'm using it as a chance, like today, driving with my daughter, we had awesome conversations. She got to see me be cool to people, like, you know, letting them cut in front of me or whatever else, and just, I don't know, it was just a good experience. So it's better than if I'd just been sitting here fucking trying to wake up. So that is what is happening. So whatever you are facing, maybe to see if you can change your perspective a little bit and look at it a little bit differently, maybe it will help. One of the things, another book that I just started reading is How to Change Your Mind, what the new science of psychedelics teaches us about consciousness, dying, addiction, depression, and transcendence by Michael Pollan. Very interesting stuff, and I'm really looking forward to that chapter. That chapter, I won't do it because it's illegal and we won't mess with Schedule I drugs, but I really want to do some good research in this subject, and I will let you guys know all about it once that does happen. Hypothetically, whether, you know, I'm not going to be the one using all this stuff, but I think it would be interesting. If it wasn't illegal, it would be pretty cool to do some of these psychedelics the way, you know, that a scientist would administer them, and then do another mind map after, you know. So at the end of, like I mentioned before, at the end of the neurofeedback, I'm going to have a final mind map. We'll be able to see how much my mind has changed, improved, all that kind of stuff. Or maybe got worse. Doubt it. It's definitely getting better. But if it wasn't illegal, if I had access to everything, what I would want to do is do several psychedelics and then measure their effect on my brain. I think that would be kind of cool. If I went crazy in the process, so be it. But I don't think that's going to happen. And especially if I were to be doing microdosing. But I've also never been a big fan of doing things just a little bit. I'd rather just jump right in. So I will let you know how that goes. All right, guys. I have therapy to go to today. Instead of going... Originally, I started once a week because I was really messed up. That was probably about a year ago. Then I went to every other week. Now I'm at once a month. So today will be my monthly checkup. Get to talk with my therapist. And got a lot of cool stuff to talk about today. But one of the things I'm looking forward to with him is going over the changes that he's seen in me and how he would rate me on several different things. And if he thinks, you know, traumatic brain injuries might have had any effect on me and my personality and all that kind of stuff. So it'll just be another cool little addition to the book. All right. So with that in mind, that's why we're doing group session. My session will be nothing like what you're about to hear, I hope. Well, actually, I know it won't because I'm the only one in there and the other voices in my head. So there might be like 3 or 4 or 5 of us in there, but none of them will have a weapon. All right, guys. Hope you enjoy the story. Have an incredible week, and I will talk to you later. Peace.
Group session. You sure you don't want me to stay, Dr. Hammond? I really don't mind. My mom can watch the kids till 8. Larry stopped rummaging through the filing cabinet just long enough to make eye contact with his overly sensitive blonde receptionist. I appreciate that, Lisa, but Wagner refuses to come in if anyone else is in the building. You know how some people feel about us. So they'd rather live an unhealthy life instead of risking embarrassment? He was tempted to say something mean and condescending, but ruled against it. Barton and Richter, the doctors he shared the practice with and who were both already on their way home, wouldn't like him abusing their precious little beauty. Larry had been pulling for a brunette, who actually had real experience. But Barton said that wasn't necessary in this line of work. Barton had the nerve to suggest that maybe after Larry had a few more years under his belt, he'd understand. So instead of saying something Lisa would take the wrong way, Larry resumed his search through the cabinet and said, "At least this guy's coming. For every one of him, there must be 100 others that couldn't be dragged in here by wild horses." "I hadn't thought about it like that. It just seems like such an inconvenience for you. Wouldn't you rather go home on time and have dinner with your wife?" Larry pulled out a folder and set it on top of the other two resting on the cabinet. Not knowing why he was telling her of all people, he said, "Actually, that's the last thing I want. We're separating." There was that predictable look of surprise, accompanied by the gasping of air and her trademark, "Oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't know." Before he could utter another word, Larry looked at the clock in the deserted waiting room. "It's 5:30 and they'll be here any minute. You really should get going before they show up." She gathered her belongings.
"I thought it was just Wagner."
"I talked him and two others into doing a group session. Should be interesting."
"Do I know the other two?"
"Maybe, but you really need to hurry." Lisa looked hurt, but Larry didn't care. He'd be able to make a name for himself if tonight's session was a success. There would be papers, talk shows, maybe even a book. If some pretty girl's feelings got hurt along the way, then so be it. Larry's first client entered the office just moments after Lisa slipped out the back door. "How are you doing, Mr. Petrowski?" Larry held the inner office door open for the little man. "Come on back." Frank Petrowski, a 48-year-old who looked closer to 60 thanks to his face, which resembled a piece of rawhide that had seen too many seasons, made his way past Larry and headed for the room. Although this was his 5th session with Frank, it was difficult holding back a smile. Standing 4'11", it was hard to take the man seriously. Larry told Frank to make himself comfortable. Wasn't surprised to see him sit in the corner chair, avoiding the couch that would make him appear even smaller. When he heard the front door close, Larry excused himself to greet the so-called Honorable Alexander Steele. Always business, Steele brushed by him and said,
"I hope they're here. I've got things to do."
"I'm sure you do." Larry followed the bald, pot-bellied judge into the room, anxious to see how he would react to someone in his chair. Obviously perturbed, Steele grunted at Frank and huffed his way over to the couch. "Just one more, gentlemen. He should be here shortly," Larry said before heading back to the receptionist counter to gather their folders. The next few minutes were torturously slow. It wasn't quite six yet, but Wagner usually showed up early, as long as he was convinced the building was empty. Hopefully, the thought of talking to others hadn't scared him off. Without him, the session would be a bust. Three people composed a small group. Only two created an awkwardly confrontational setting, especially the two in the room now. And it wasn't the number of people present that necessitated Wagner's presence. There was something about the man that set him apart from the other patients. He was dealing with the same issues as Steele and Petrowski, but he was more willing to accept responsibility for his actions. Without him, there would be no group, no published paper, no TV show. Just as Larry was about to lose hope, the front door swung open.
"Evening, Mr. Wagner. I was afraid you wouldn't come."
The muscular 30-year-old looked around the empty waiting room and peeked into the receptionist's area.
"Everybody gone?"
"Yep. Just me and the other two men I told you about." Wagner seemed unusually tense, so Larry asked, "You okay?" Wagner said he was fine, but Larry didn't buy it. He locked the front door, hoping to take away some of the man's anxiety.
"You mind if we take care of the payment up front?"
Wagner pulled a wad of bills from his pocket.
"I got some stuff to handle after this."
Larry waved away Wagner's money.
"This one's on the house. I expect the session to be very productive, but until we've tried it out once or twice, I wouldn't feel comfortable charging for it. The only thing I ask is that I be permitted to use any material in future papers or books. Of course, I will change all names to protect identities."
Wagner shrugged his shoulders and slipped the thick roll back into his tan pants.
"And whatever."
It seemed like some type of thanks was in order, considering he had just saved the man $100. But Larry let it slide. As he led the way down the hallway, he asked, "Have you had a chance to look into any insurance yet? Wouldn't want the cost of treatment to prevent you from coming."
"Money's not an issue."
"Good," Larry said as they entered the office, reminding himself to jot down a question for next week's private session with Wagner. How is money not an issue for an unemployed ex-cop 3 years off the force? Wagner took a seat on the couch next to Steele while Larry rolled his chair out from behind the desk, positioning it so Wagner was in front of him, Frank off to his left. He noticed Steele checking his watch and apologized to the group for the delay, even though it was only 4 minutes past six. "I've brought the three of you together because you're dealing with similar issues, and there's no support groups out there for you. I'm trained, just as most psychologists and therapists are, to give you insight into some of your problems. But this is a subject that the medical community has not studied sufficiently. That's why it might be helpful to talk with peers who were going through the same thing." Larry hoped the others hadn't noticed the judge rolling his eyes behind his glasses at the mention of peers. "This is going to be a very informal discussion where each of you will get the chance to tell the group about yourself and ask questions of each other. I'll facilitate as needed, but this will be your time. Why don't we start with your names?" With everyone acting as if they were at a seventh grade dance, Larry pointed at Frank and said, "How about we start over here?" Frank shot him an unpleasant glance, but predictably obeyed orders.
"I'm Officer Petrowski."
Larry followed Wagner's eyes to Petrowski's waist, where they were probably searching for a badge or a gun that verified the diminutive man's claim. Frank seemed to sense the doubt and clarified,
"CO, over at Sussex One State Prison in Waverly."
"I think this might be smoother if we're less formal," Larry told him.
"Well, then I guess you guys can call me Frank. I'm used to using last names. I don't think I could name three coworkers by their first names." Well, I know the feeling.
Wagner chipped in, his earlier tension visibly reduced.
I was a cop in Richmond for 4 years. Name's Charles Wagner. Charlie's fine.
Thanks, Charlie. Larry turned to the oldest in the group. And last but not least...
Judge Steele.
Before Larry could ask for his first name, the judge grudgingly said,
Alexander.
Not Alex, but Alexander. So, we've got Frank, Charlie, and Alexander. Please call me Larry. Now, what do you say we get started? Larry took the group's silence as a green light. Everyone here has been having a difficult time dealing with their role in death. That said, let's get into specifics. Tell us why you're here, why you've sought treatment. Alexander, will you please start?
I came because my wife said I should.
Larry realized the man wasn't going to say anything more if not prompted. And why did she suggest you come in? Alexander glared at Larry.
We've been over this.
But not with them. You don't have to go into detail, just an overview. Alexander thought about it for a second.
Well, I'm a judge. I've condemned people to die. Sometimes it bothers me, he mumbled.
It was a start. Larry nodded his head and motioned for Charlie to go next.
Well, I've been forced to take lives more than once. But the guilt I feel about one in particular has been a little too much, I suppose.
Good, we'll go into that death later. Larry jotted a note on Charlie's folder. Frank, your turn.
Like I said before, I'm a CO over at Sussex One. I'm on the execution squad. Sometimes it's too much, like Charlie said.
Speaking to no one in particular, Larry said, Just so you all know, each of you has confided in me the amount of stress these deaths have caused you. I ask that no one diminishes their experiences now that the others are present. Be assured you are all men and have dealt with your positions and responsibilities remarkably well. You have some of society's most demanding jobs, and you are forced to deal with psychological and moral issues. Feeling guilty or ashamed of things you've done is natural. Not being affected would lead me to believe there was something wrong. Tonight, you need to give these feelings voice. No one will laugh or think less of you. This is a healing process, and with that comes pain. Welcome it. Don't avoid it. Larry gave his speech a moment to set in before asking, Frank, can you tell us more about your problem?
Like what?
Larry checked his watch. At this rate, they'd be here till daybreak.
Well, why don't you start by telling us about your job? What exactly do you do on this team?
Well, I'm on strap down.
The duties are a little different depending upon whether we're burning or sticking.
What's that? Larry asked.
Strap down?
No, the burning or sticking.
Electric chair or lethal injection. They get a choice.
How nice, Charlie said. That's one hell of a decision to make.
At least they only got to make it once, Frank said. But anyway, like I was saying, I'm on strap down, so I walk the guy in and strap him down to the table or chair and watch. Kind of like in the Green Mile or that one with the colored girl and that retarded guy from Sling Blade.
Hoping to avoid any racial discussions, Larry said,
Monster's Ball.
Well, that doesn't sound like it. Something else. This one had that girl. The one that's not so bad looking for, you know, being dark and all.
Halle Berry, yes, Monster's Ball, trust me.
Even though the discussion had gotten sidetracked, Charlie seemed intrigued.
You stay until the guy's dead?
Frank nodded.
Even after?
We get the pleasure of unstrapping him and rolling him out.
The judge surprised them all by speaking.
How long have you been doing this?
I've been the CO for 29 years. On the execution squad for 28 of them.
Alexander asked,
Did you volunteer for this position?
Well, the warden handpicks the team. Of course, you can withdraw or decline any time.
Larry saw where this was headed, but the judge had already started his question.
So why do it? If you ask me, you only have yourself to blame. If putting murderers to death bothers you so much, then maybe you need a new line of work.
Frank was defending himself before Larry could come to his aid.
I can handle it. I do handle it. But it's hard. I've helped kill 51 people in the last 6 years, and I've got another 35 waiting their turn after getting condemned in court.
So now it's my fault?
Well, someone's sending these guys to me. I don't go out there and find them on the street.
Alexander shook his head.
Judges don't sentence people to death.
I understand that, Frank said. But I also understand that a judge has a great deal of influence over the jury. We're second in the nation, only behind Texas. They'll kill you over there for jaywalking. Frank cracked his knuckles. So if you're such a fair and just judge, then why are you here? You said you've condemned people to die.
Only in a manner of speaking.
Larry held up his hand to halt the discussion. We're not here to pass judgment on one another. We're not here to attack. We're here to listen. Alexander, tell them what you told me before. It's okay. Alexander pulled a monogrammed handkerchief from his pocket and wiped the sweat off his forehead. He sighed.
I do encourage the death penalty when I believe it's warranted, and I guess I can influence juries.
Frank nodded. But believing a man should die doesn't make putting him to death any easier to accept, right?
Oh. I can't sleep some nights. I wonder if I've made the right decision. If I should be playing God. I wonder if we failed as a society when a decision like that rests in the hands of so few.
After a small lull, Larry stepped in. So, Charlie, why don't you tell them some of the things that you're going through? You don't have to give specifics. Focus on your feelings. How it's affected you. Charlie cleared his throat. Sometimes I have difficulty sleeping, too. Almost every night since my revelation. Charlie rubbed his thighs and began to rock. It's not because of the lives I've taken, though. This was just a one-time thing, but once was more than enough. I helped kill a man that didn't deserve to die.
When was this? Frank asked.
Over 10 years ago. I was only 19. Frank said,
You have to be 21 to be a cop.
I wasn't a cop yet. Larry reminded Charlie that doctor-patient privileges only went so far, but this guy had been a cop and knew that. Alexander asked the question.
You murdered a man?
Charlie's rocking became more pronounced.
I might as well have.
It's okay, Charlie. Try to relax, Larry said. I was called for jury duty. First time I'd even heard of a jury. Anyway, I got selected for the trial of Gregory Watkins, Murder One.
I remember him. Frank said. Colored guy. He got stuck a few years ago. For a while, it seemed like he'd never leave the row.
Alexander said,
Gregory Watkins. If I remember correctly, that psycho killed over 20 people, all women and children. He wrote on them, too. Carved messages on their backs. Judge Hall ruled on that one.
Hall? He's a friend of yours? Charlie asked.
Well, more like an acquaintance, but we get along.
If you ever see him again, you can thank him for screwing up my life.
What are you talking about, son?
First off, I'm not your son or anyone else's. Charlie's hands had become fists.
Oh, it's just a manner of speech,
Alexander said, his hard edge softened by Charlie's aggressive attitude.
what Frank was saying about a judge's influence, let's just say that Hall practically forced us to give him the death penalty.
Well, I doubt that.
You weren't there, Larry jumped in and asked. You don't think he deserved the death penalty?
Absolutely not, Charlie said.
Well, then how was the vote unanimous? Frank wondered.
At the time, we all thought he was guilty. Back then, I was still a kid. I believed everything they showed us in court. Now I know better.
Frank's furrowed brow showed he didn't understand. He killed those people. I talked to him about it. Said he had to. Wouldn't even say he was sorry when the needle went in. He was one unremorseful son of a bitch.
Alexander said he'd read the same thing in the paper.
This guy was guilty. You feel worse about condemning an admitted murderer than you do about shooting a criminal in the street?
Charlie looked confused. I never once fired my weapon. Frank said, What about all those lives you said you had to take? Are you trying to tell us you actually beat people to death? Did you use your baton?
You were kicked off the force for brutality, Alexander guessed.
I quit. I never brutalized anyone on the job, never once, he said, outraged at the suggestion. So you were lying? Frank hoped. Charlie jumped to his feet. I don't lie, he yelled. You all lie. Society lies. My parents lied. I don't lie.
Larry inched up from his chair. No one had ever acted like this in a therapy before. He was almost too scared to wish he had thought of videotaping the session.
Easy, Charlie. Take it easy and have a seat. You sit down, Larry, now.
Larry flinched and slid back down into his chair. This is my office.
Not anymore, Larry.
Stop saying my name like that. Charlie didn't sit down, but seemed to calm down a notch.
It's about time you start being a professional. Why go by your first name? Are you supposed to be our goddamn friend?
Frank stood. In his best I'm in charge voice, he said,
That's enough. Now sit down and relax, or...
Charlie glanced at him.
Or what? Or you can leave. There's three of us.
You're threatening me?
No one is threatening anyone, Larry said. A Napoleonic racist, a condescending prick judge.
Alexander didn't get off the couch.
Watch it, son.
Charlie wheeled on the old man and slapped him so hard his glasses went flying off.
I'm no one's son.
Frank took a step toward Charlie, but stopped the moment Charlie turned toward him. Frank said,
You can't do that. That's assault.
The judge fumbled for his glasses, now somewhere on the floor. Larry tried to calm the melee.
That's enough, everyone. Let's just calm down.
Charlie wasn't having it. With one step, his chest was pressed against Frank's nose.
I said, sit down. Now.
Frank stood his ground, but couldn't control his trembling. Charlie took a small step back, lulled Larry into thinking his rage had subsided. Then he threw a devastating elbow down and across Frank's nose. The CO crumbled to the floor, curling up with both his hands to his bloody face. Larry scrambled to his desk, but Charlie yelled at him before he could pick up the phone. Charlie said,
Don't do it, Larry. You don't want to do that.
Larry turned, saw Charlie kneeling over Frank. Charlie had a switchblade. Charlie, you need to listen to me. Look what you are doing. Frank tried to rise up, but Charlie applied pressure to his neck. More blood leaked into the expanding pool.
I didn't say you could get up. Larry said, He needs a doctor.
You're a doctor, and you're not helping.
And you're not a murderer. You're just upset. Let me call for help.
No one's calling anyone, Larry. None of us deserves to be saved.
He's bleeding, Charlie. Look at him.
Yeah, the carpet will need to be replaced. Charlie saw Larry's hand.
If you pick up that phone, there will be a price. What do you want, Charlie? What do you hope to...
Alexander yelled at him. Don't try to reason with this sick bastard!
A huge smile spread across Charlie's cheeks. He's right, you know. I'm not reasonable.
The judge slid his butt toward the edge of the couch.
We can fight him.
Charlie laughed maniacally. He raised the blade, and Larry charged, lowered his shoulder, and tackled him off of Frank. The two rolled into the wall. Charlie's breath was warm against Larry's neck. Larry pulled himself off of Charlie and saw his eyes wild and filled with pain. Larry looked down, saw the knife, and shoved it into his patient's chest.
Oh, God,
Larry said, realizing what he'd done. Charlie's lungs were filling with blood. He leaned into the knife.
Hey, Doc, Charlie gasped.
Now, you're one of us.